Hi and welcome to the Unschool Space, the podcast that's here to help parents embrace their personal journey into unschooling with all the joy and challenges it's likely to bring. Each episode I speak with other parents about their experiences. This is episode 60 and I'm your host, Esther Jones. And if you are interested in hearing more about unschooling and mindful parenting, come and find me on Instagram or my website, which is esther-jones.com, and sign up for my newsletter. And I'm very excited to be offering a new course specifically on mindful deschooling. So this 5-week course will give you all the information and tools that you need to move more easily from a place of worry and resistance to a place of trust and flow with your children. That starts on Friday, May the 10th, and you can find all the information on my website. So today I am delighted to chat with Heidi Steele, who was on the podcast 3 years ago, so it's lovely to catch up again. So Heidi is a former teacher and has 4 children who are 16, 15, 12 and 9, and who have never been to school. Heidi shares what unschooling looks like for her family, and we talk about the enormous value of play in children's learning and development. And amongst other things, we also discuss valuing our children's voices and opinions over compliance and how that's essential for them as they get older. And how living in this consensual way with our children can be far more joyful for everyone. I hope you enjoy the conversation. Hi, Heidi. Thank you so much for your time today. Lovely to be chatting with you again.
Thank you, Esther. It's nice to be here. It's nice to see you again, actually. It's been a while, I think, hasn't it?
Yeah, it has been a long time. It's about 2 years or so.
Mm.
So, well, yeah, maybe you could tell us a little bit about what your family's up to now, or maybe just for people who haven't heard the first episode. Yeah, tell us a little bit about your journey.
So I have 4 children. They are currently aged 16, 15, 12 and 9, and none of them have ever been to school, and we have always chosen to unschool. So we've never sort of done school at home or anything that sort of resembles school. So we've been doing this a long time, so over 12 or 13 years now. They are all very happy doing their own thing. Yeah, we have lots of different things going on in the house. You know, my 9-year-old makes bucket loads of slime, and I'm not even exaggerating. There's a lot of slime making in our house. That's sort of her thing at the moment, I guess.
We finished that phase, thankfully. Slime phase.
I'm like an expert in how to get slime out of, you know, carpet and hair and dogs. So that comes with the territory. We have a lot of art and craft going on in our house. My older two are particularly into gaming. My eldest likes digital art and Dungeons and Dragons. They probably are. Oh, that we have a lot. My younger two have a lot of other activity going on. They're quite physical, so it's like gymnastics and dance, and they're on a cheerleading squad. You know, so yeah, we have we're quite busy. Lots going on, and none of it looks very school-like. That's been one of the enduring things. Like nothing has quite turned out school-like at any point in our particular journey for any of my children yet. Obviously there's still time for that, but
yeah. Maybe just to mention here, Heidi, that you're a teacher by profession, of course, aren't you?
Yes.
There's so many teachers on the podcast, which is interesting.
Yeah, one of the reasons, or probably certainly in the beginning, probably the driving force behind the decision to choose to home educate, and in particular to continue to allow my children to play, because my background really is in child development and early years and learning through play. So it was a very conscious decision in the beginning that would be sufficient, and I was sort of confident. Yeah, and we're sort of still doing that over a decade later.
Yeah, actually, just on the play, I was just reading something by Peter Gray this week, and of course, something that is so missed out in our society is that play is learning. That's how children learn. It is what they have invented to learn, isn't it, about the world, and it's the way they develop, and how we've diminished that so much, or devalued it, haven't we?
I think we've completely devalued it, and we've completely separated it from from learning. We say, you know, culturally, we say, you know, this is learning, you know, doing a workbook is learning, or somebody deliberately setting out to teach you something is learning. But actually, whilst you're just playing, in inverted commas, you know, that's fun, that's leisure, that's, you know, we sort of separate the two things. But actually, for children and actually for adults as well, play and the process of play is how children make sense of the world and how they interact with the world and how they give things a go. And, you know, one, I think one of the obvious ways we see it is when children do role play, so when they dress up or when they play with little toys. Quite often, if you take a step back and watch your children doing that, you will actually see themes. They'll mirror themes that are happening in real life. So one of the ones that my daughter did that springs to mind was, like, during pandemic, my daughter was really interested in travel and how people travel. And a lot of her play with her Barbies, she still is into Barbies, was how people get on aeroplanes and how people go on boats. And it was her way of making sense of the fact that those things couldn't happen. It's really common when we watch kids' TV shows, they pick up themes that are really important to children and run them through, you know, Peppa Pig, I don't know, goes to the dentist, whatever. But yeah, it's their way of making sense.
Yeah.
Making sense of the world. In fact, what they say is, and Peter Gray says this, is, you know, adults talk, children play. So adults talk through making sense. So you'll pick up the phone and say, oh, I saw this today, or we did this today. And that's how you process what's happening in your day-to-day life. Children play.
Yeah. Yeah, it's funny, like you say, we've made learning into this thing that's separate from life. But of course, and I think that's something that trips people up when they first take their children out of school is, it's so ingrained in us that learning looks like school and school looks like learning, that it's very hard to get away from that. Even when you really trust something else is going to happen and you have that trust, you know, if all you have ever seen is learning looking like school, you know, with all those very specific things to it, you know, 30 children in a class, an adult talking, a curriculum, it looks like they're necessary for learning. But of course they're not, are they?
No, not at all. Not at all. And many unschooled children, like, prove that, you know, if you are home educating and you are able to find real in-person community, that is something that you will really witness firsthand, that, you know, children are growing and developing and learning stuff as they go. It just doesn't look, it's just so different to school, it seems. And of course, like, we as adults, most of us, the majority of us, have been through the school system. Culturally, it's the way that everybody's educated. It really is like our only experience. That's the only thing we know. So to sort of step outside of that and give something else a room, can feel very daunting, because you don't have any experience of it. You don't have an anchor for how this works or how it's going to turn out, or, you know, what's going to happen in 5 years, or, you know, when they should be, you know, should be, in inverted commas, taking GCSEs, or,
yeah,
you know, when do they stop playing and become an adult and go to work, you know, right. What's, you know, you don't have any reference for it, do you?
No, and I think it's a catch-22, because of course we know that if you don't, you need to really trust your children deeply, but of course if you've got nothing to hang on to, it's quite hard to trust. But I guess that's, you know, there are lots of podcasts out there. There's this one, there's yours, there's books, there's so many things now, aren't there, that we can, that help.
And also, once you start taking those steps, like, it's, you can trust what's going forward, because you can look back and say, this has happened in the past. You know, my 16-year-old isn't the same now as when he was six.
Right.
You know, there has been growth and development and change, and that has happened through the process of unschooling, you know, through trusting, you know, my children, by allowing them the space to make decisions and mistakes, and, you know, be the driving force in their own lives and learning. So I can look back and say, okay, well, we've got this far and these things have happened, so I can take that to sort of encourage me into the
future. Yeah, absolutely. Once you've got your own experiences also to reflect on. So yeah, something we were talking about before, Heidi, was four children. So
I'm sure people ask you, how do you manage all those different needs at home? Because also, you know, they're older from, you know, when we last talked. Yeah, can you talk us through a little bit about what that might look like to manage so many different needs and for you to not end up exhausted and depleted in that?
Yeah, that's sort of two different questions, really, isn't it? And they are very both very worthy questions. So, you know, we unschool, so, you know, my relationship with my children is very different to maybe a traditional parent-child dynamic. There are lots of things I don't do, along with not do in school. You know, I don't just tell my children what we're doing and then they all, I'm going to say, skip along happily. My children wouldn't skip along happily at all. You know, so we have lots of needs, but we also have lots of voices in our family because we've given them the space to be able to say, no, I don't want to do that, or that's not for me, and those voices might not be as explicit as that. I say that a lot sometimes, particularly when children are younger. You know, it might actually just involve them sharing their opinions in other ways, like sitting on the floor and not moving, or running off in another direction.
Right.
You know, they know how to make themselves heard. But I guess for us, really, it's lots and lots of talking, lots of negotiation, lots of, you know, just like listening, really getting to know my children, which obviously comes with experience. You know, the best ways to talk to them, best time to talk to them, giving them all a seat at the table, you know, when we're thinking about what we're doing. There are obviously lots of children in my house, so four, and they all like different things. So giving them space for all those things to happen, doing our best to, you know, find a way forward for all of us. Particularly if we all come together, like if we're going on a day out and we're all going. I mean, particularly now they're older, we've reached the age of reasoning with most of my children. So we can talk about things like, well, we can do X in the morning and Y in the afternoon. And we can have those discussions. It's a bit trickier when they're younger because they don't have that capability to do that. But sort of always, I was going to say always making sure they're happy. But, you know, like when they were younger, if we went out for one of my children or two of my children because they wanted to go to the park, maybe, and the other two didn't want to go to the park, we'd try and find a park that the other two could find a quiet space in and, you know, sit in a corner, and we'd take their tablets with us or something. Or, you know, we'd go to the one that we actually knew had the best ice cream so we could get an ice cream. So it's very different because it's not that sort of, right, we're going to the park whether you like it or not, come on, off we go, skip, you know. It looks very different. Go for it.
It's just that's an interesting point, isn't it? Because what you're not looking for is compliance. That's not, you know, mainstream parenting and all the advice tends to be about this sort of role of being a parent. It's almost like you're playing a role, and all these, you know, techniques and strategies really to get compliance at the end of the day. And of course, you're not coming from that perspective, or we're not coming from that perspective. So it really transforms the relationship, doesn't it? And those conversations can take place because they're feeling validated and heard. So I think it sort of brings everyone into a very different zone, I think, than from when parent is in charge.
Yeah, I think so. You know, I like the relationship that I have with my children. I like that they can say, no, I don't want to do that. Even if that's tricky at times, because it puts a spanner in the works of maybe this, what we'd planned. The fact that they feel confident and comfortable being able to express, or even, let's even go back to, because you asked me about, you know, including myself in this, let's just go back to even being able to say, I'm not comfortable with that, because compliance doesn't make room for that stuff. It doesn't make room for, and I think there's an aspect where when you don't make room for it, you then sort of start to ignore it, or you don't recognize what it is, because you're not in the habit of practicing, I don't feel comfortable, even if you can't name it as I'm exhausted, or I don't like that, or I'm feeling really angry. Even if you can't pinpoint, but just being able to say, hang on, that's not for me.
I think Yeah, absolutely.
You know, I think it's a gift, and it's not easy when you've got so many voices around the table, but I think it paves a better way forward for humanity. There's a really big idea. Sorry, Dad.
No, bring it, make it big.
In there.
But you know, what I was just thinking there was who wants a compliant adult? Why would we really want our children to be compliant? Because it doesn't really serve the world, and it doesn't really serve an adult. That's when burnout happens, because exactly what you're saying, we're ignoring our own needs. And we're looking for approval, we're looking for, because we expect ourselves to be compliant, or we're just out of touch with what we need. And I agree with you. I'm not sure where does that take us all, really.
Sorry, it was just a really big thought, wasn't it? But, you know, it's just, I think, talking about myself personally, that I became like a yes person. Like, I just said yes to everything when I was younger. Yes, I'll do that. Yes, I'll do that. Yes, I'll do that. And it just came to mind, because you talk about things like burnout. Like, as an adult, if I'm saying yes to everything all the time, and yes to everyone, and yes to four children all the time, without any consideration for me, it leads to ill health. It leads to burnout. It doesn't lead anywhere good, you know. So it gives my children a bit of a gift, really. And yes, it's not straightforward, because they're not well practiced at negotiating or being flexible. But those things come with practice, come with us going through that process year in and year out and day in and day out. We went out last week, and we went to Legoland, and it was a lovely day. I know, it was really beautiful. My 12-year-old wanted to go on a ride, and my 15-year-old, who, if you'd known when he was 4, 5, 6, 9, 10, 11, you know, he was my runner. He was my one that found and still does find the world quite a difficult place to be in, and finds everything very overwhelming. But he said he'd go on this ride with her, and he clearly didn't enjoy it. He came off and was like, that was awful. And we were watching him, and I was thinking, that is not right for him. He didn't enjoy it at all. But later in the day, my 12-year-old said, I really want to go on that ride again before we go home. And I just said, well, who's going to go on it with you? Thinking she'd say me. And she said, oh, I want to take, you know, my 15-year-old brother. I'm going to take. And he went, yeah, okay then. And I said to him, you don't have to go on. I know you didn't like it. I'll go on with her. No, it's all right. I'll go on. He clearly hated it even more the second time round. But I know. But I thought, wow, look, like, he did that because she reached out to him and said, I choose you. Yeah. And he went, okay, I'll do that. And it was, you know, for me, it was one of those, oh, look, you've, you know, years ago, you wouldn't even have gone on the first time. You wouldn't have done something because somebody else asked you to. But there was this sort of connection with his sister that said, yeah, I'm going to do that with you. I'm going to take care of you. I'll go on the ride so you don't have to do it alone. And it was really sweet to watch. We did have a conversation later where I said, you didn't have to do that. We did revisit it, and he was like, no, it was fine, I didn't mind. Which wasn't what his face told me when he was on the ride. But you know, I think I was just using it as a, you know, they do develop these skills.
You know what that makes me think of, though, is how, yeah, they developed the skills, and how he naturally was very compassionate to his sister, and how actually, if you give children agency and the ability to say no, they have the ability to give their full yes as well, and to reach into, you know, whatever feels generous in them or good in them, because they can, they're free to do that.
Yeah, and there's something nice about knowing that that yes is a genuine yes. Like, because he has the option to say no, when he says yes, it's a wholehearted, genuine yes. It's not out of compliance, which is probably what I was referring to when I said yes to everything. It was a compliance thing, because I didn't have agency. I didn't know how to, I didn't have the opportunity to say no, or didn't feel like I did.
Yeah, same here. I think that's a common story for us. It's funny, because my children, yours probably do the same with you, but if they feel that my yes is not a full yes, then they'll say, don't bother. So my daughter, in particular, if she wants to play with me or go for a walk or something, she notices in my voice that I'm a little bit reluctant or, you know, whatever, she'll say, okay, hang on, do you really want to, or are you just saying yes? And if I say, she goes, no, we won't go. And because it's just not of interest to her, you know, and because it doesn't feel good, doesn't feel good to her. And she's absolutely right. So then we, you know, then I'll say, well, no, you're right, I don't really feel like it, but maybe I will in an hour. Should we check in then?
Yeah.
And you think, wow, that's, you know, we're coming, you know, consent. She can tell what she's being offered. I think it's a really huge topic, really, isn't it?
It is. But, you know, like you said about, you know, how do I bring like myself into that? And I think, yeah, we need to be really aware of ourselves in that as well. And like, what, how do we feel about a certain thing, and how can we meet our needs in that picture, and what capacity do we have? Yeah. And I think there's a lot of learning for certainly a lot of the parents that I work with who are come to unschooling and say, oh, I want to unschool my child, and it's, let's talk more about that. And then at some point, invariably, people say to me, this isn't really about unschooling, but where do I fit into this? When do I get a break? Or, you know, what if I'm with my children all that time, like, when do I get to do my thing? And I think there's an actual huge unlearning and relearning process for ourselves. Like, where do I fit in, and how does that, what does that look like? There isn't that 6-hour division when our children are at school, and then we have space to think about, you know, what we purposefully put in there. There isn't that. And if you've got lots of children, or they've got particular needs, they can be very demanding. I'm going to say demanding. You know, it takes a lot of time and energy.
And what do you, in your life then, Heidi, how do you kind of balance that with your needs, or how do you work that in?
I've become a lot better myself. I think then this is one of the things that unschooling has taught me, or my children have taught me, like how to recognize in myself when something's too much, like that I don't have energy for that. Mummy, can we go swimming? Actually, I'm not sure I have energy for that today. Let's think about another day, or let's think about, you know, an alternative, you know, just really checking in with myself, but also becoming more self-aware. So over time, I now know that there are certain times in the lunar cycle where I feel more energetic than others, and therefore I can sort of preempt those things. Or knowing that there was a time when my children really liked eating pancakes for breakfast, so I had pancakes too, and I noticed, you know, so I observed in myself, oh, hang on a minute, when I eat pancakes in the morning, give it about an hour, and something like my blood sugars just plummeted, and I would feel really bad. Oh, okay, actually, pancakes don't work for me. Let's find out what does work for me, that gives me maybe something that's a bit longer sustaining, or, you know, less up and down with the digestive sugars, or, you know, just more observing, more being in tune with myself, which actually, because of the lifestyle we lead, my children seem to be better at naturally, because no one had told them otherwise. No one had come along and said, no, you must sleep for 10 hours a day, so, and that's how it works. They sort of are in tune with their own sleep cycles, and yeah, that's probably was my biggest thing. And capacity, just knowing myself more, like realizing, okay, do you know, we've done too much this week. Like, for me, like, I have overscheduled. I cannot manage that again, you know, and playing around with things and tweaking. And
And do you think also that people, when they think, oh, being with your children all day, they're kind of thinking of that intensity that is the time after school or the weekend? But of course, when you're living with each other in a more kind of an easier way, and you're not having to be the kind of the police officer for homework and getting school clothes on, get out the door, taking all that out of it. I think we live in a different way with our children as well.
Definitely. Because there isn't the same sort of strain on that relationship and that same sort of approach You know, and I can't speak from experience because I've never done it, but I see other families that have experienced it and lived that way. And I see it everywhere because culturally it's everywhere. You know, parents trying to get their children to do homework and making them read a book every night and doing, I don't know, different clubs after school and being the ones that take them here and take them there. And the relationship I think we have with our children, because we're not making them do those things or feeling like we need, you know, we are policing those things. Our relationship is very different.
Yeah.
Much softer, much, you know, we have times when we just laugh together and a lot of times that we laugh together, and being in the same room as each other isn't difficult because I'm not going to suddenly say, what's 5 times 2? Or, you know, spring in preparation for the test on Friday. And they don't feel, so my children don't feel that same sort of, if I walk into a room with my mum, she's going to, like, this is going to be what happens. And so they don't sort of squirrel away and avoid me in the same way. Yeah. There's breathing space and those things. Yeah, I probably take for granted, actually. You know, you pointing them out. Like, I probably take those things for granted because it's not something we've ever done.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting. We were talking just before about that, about how we are with our children and how all those cultural norms around parenting can really get in the way of the relationship if we're not careful. And that actually sometimes it's just nice to just be nice and just all enjoy being together without, because I'm the parent, without me needing you to be something else, to do more, to achieve. Like, what about just enjoying each other's company as people? You know, okay, we're always the parent, of course. But I think there's so many layers of what a parent is supposed to be like that can be quite detrimental, I think, to a relationship.
I think we as parents feel judged by how our children do certain things. So, you know, like if we're eating dinner together, which I'm going to add happens probably twice a year, right? Let's, you know, all six of us together at the same time. If we're eating dinner together and that becomes about, you know, are you sat on the chair properly instead of sat like up on your feet, and do you have your elbows on the table, and are you cutting your food in the right way? And if it becomes about all of those things rather than we are together and we're enjoying each other's company and having a meal, you know, it changes the dynamic. And as parents, we feel judged if, for example, you know, we have maybe family come round and they're eating dinner with us. You know, how do they feel if my children aren't able to hold a knife and fork properly? And I've sort of shed all that and gone, I don't care what you think. And that's made it a lot easier. But we do think, we're always thinking, people judge our parenting based on how our children behave or the things that they are doing. So then our relationship becomes about, well, I need to teach them how to say please, and I need to teach them. And our interactions are all about, have you said please? Have you said thank you? Have you brushed your hair? And that becomes like the focus of every interaction we have with them. Whereas those things probably occupy about 1% of our conversations. And I know which children respond to those things and which children don't. So, for example, my daughter's just bought new socks and she's become very, very keen. So they've got the days of the week on, and she's become very keen that she wears the right day on the right day. And so I now also, so that is my 1% interaction. Oh, we're going out sailing. Have you got the right days on your socks? Let's check. Because that's important to her.
Right.
So I do that. But I don't check anybody else's socks.
Right.
I don't even check they've got pairs on. It just is not. Yeah.
I've got one. He never ever wears the same. He always wears some different socks.
Yeah. Well, in fact, her PDA sister said to her, well, I wouldn't wear the right days on the right day at all. In fact, I would wear odd socks and they would both have different days.
Excellent.
And I thought, wow, that's like, that should be on the diagnostic criteria.
I love it. Yeah, I could think of a few things to add to the diagnostic criteria that would make it very clear.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah, I love that. Yeah. Yeah. But you're right. It's just a different way of living, really, isn't it? And at the moment, we've got, well, two, who, one's at the local college and one is doing some exams himself at home and preparing for them. So I'm finding myself in that slightly odd place of knowing that an assignment has to be done or that something needs to be done and helping support them through that. But it's a fragile place, I have to say, and one that I'm learning about. And when I'm pushing and I don't realize I've stepped over a line and I have to sort of come back again, or it's been very interesting. And I'll tell you something very interesting that came up today that I was talking to a friend about. It's when your child is doing something and you think you see how it should be done, but they're not doing it that way. And so in this case, it was someone here filling out an application for something, but not filling it out quite right. It was had very obvious things missing. And I pointed that out and they said, no, I don't really feel like putting those. I'm going to send it off anyway. And in me, I'm thinking, no, don't send it off. It's not perfect. But it was an interesting thing to sit with because they were adamant, no, it was going to go just as it was. And I thought, well, yeah, maybe they're not ready for it yet. Maybe this is the little step they have to make. Maybe like there were so many things going on for them. But when you're looking in from the outside and go, oh, it needs to look like this. And as they get older, I'm finding that that is quite a piece of it. And looking at the way they are interacting with, you know, the wider world and thinking, oh, I'd have done that differently. And resisting. Well, I suppose we're doing that all the time, aren't we? Resisting going, it really needs to be like that, you know.
Which is interesting, isn't it? Because I know that you've been unschooling for a long time too. And actually things like that are just like that schooled norm sort of coming to the top. Well, hang on a minute, this form needs to be perfect. You're supposed to, you know, this is how you fill out a form. You know, this is the right way to do it. And for us to feel that need to instruct them and teach them in that way, that this is rather than going through that process of them figuring it out for themselves and maybe getting feedback from somebody else that says, oh, you know, tell me more about this because you haven't filled it out right.
Exactly.
or it being rejected entirely because and in being comfortable with them going through that experience as part of their learning process. But it's interesting you bring it up because we've both been doing this a long time and still those things surface, don't they? And they do.
Yes, I think it's just an intentional practice that no doubt is bigger at the beginning. And if you, the more years of school, you potentially the more intentionality you have to bring to it. But it's always there, I think. And as the children get older, I think you bump against sort of new edges. It's a little bit softer. Yep. And I think by that time you have more tools to go, hang on a minute.
Yeah, that's what I say. I say it's a bit like you recognise it when it happens. Like it comes up and you go, oh, this is familiar.
Yeah.
Oh, yes, this is what's happening. Rather than in the beginning when it's like such an onslaught because the learning curve is like really steep. And it's sort of that first time of kind of being faced with all these different questions and feelings and it's different but it's the same.
Absolutely. I think the difference for me is that now whenever a little thing comes up, I pretty much know it's a me thing, whereas in the early days it's kind of like is this a child, you think, oh, this is a child thing, and then you go, maybe there's a bit of me in this. And now anything that comes up is definitely a me thing. And I have some tools to to sit with it. And I'm always, they always prove me right. It was good to not intervene. But it is interesting. I think that that's the, I call it unraveling. A lot of people sort of peeling back the layers.
Yeah, definitely.
It just keeps going, doesn't it, really, probably. But it gets more gentle for anyone listening out there.
Yeah, it does get more gentle. Like I said, I think you just recognise, oh, yes, that's happening again. Okay, let's take some time to sit with that. And like you say, you realise it's you, and it's you that needs to spend the time, you know, thinking that through or listening to a podcast on it or, you know, hanging out with your other unschooling families and saying, oh, this hit me this week. Or, you know, like you say, those tools. You've got more tools.
Yeah. And so, yeah, I was going to ask you actually about community. Is that something that you've found easily where you're living?
We're really fortunate where I'm living. Community, did it come easily? Yeah, that's an interesting question. It takes effort. And so you use the word intentional. It takes intentionality. It takes effort. It takes sort of repeatedly maybe putting yourself out there, finding spaces that don't work, you know, and groups that aren't a good fit for you and your children. You know, those things happen and have happened to me. But over the years, definitely now, very, you know, 12 years, very fortunate to have sort of long-term local friends that we've made. You know, like I said, where I live, there are lots of families and lots of options. There's lots going on. So there's lots of different things you can try and places you can meet people. But it was hard in the beginning because unschooling really called for me to be very present with my children, and my children required me to be very present with them. So actually making connections as an adult with other adults was quite tricky, especially with four children, because I was spinning plates with four children, and you know, I had one that was a runner and one that was a sitter and not move, and so I had a lot going on just trying to manage the small humans. So yeah, it became easier when my children started making connections with other children. And then in that way I began to connect with the parents. Yeah, I know a lot of people finding community difficult. A lot of the people that I work with have children that maybe don't want to leave the house, particularly if they're single parents as well. I've worked with a large number of single parents, so that then becomes trickier. But, you know, we're non-conventional. We're trying to find ways around things, problem solving. So I could fling some ideas at you. You know, we used to have... you know, older, so when my children were younger, older teens, home educated teens would maybe come over and play with one of them whilst I did stuff with the other one. You know, me and my husband very much sort of, I was going to say divide and conquer. When you've got other adults around, like utilize the other adults.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Which then made way for me maybe being able to take out one child or two at a time to something and being able to connect with other people and reaching out online. It helps even if you can just connect with somebody locally, you know, just shared experiences. Yeah. And at some point you may find that you are able to connect. Yeah, it's a really interesting question. I know people have very varied experiences of communities, particularly, or even just in the UK, you know, based on your location.
Absolutely.
And your situation.
I think you're right. I think it's, you know, one of the most difficult ones, I think, is if you have, well, obviously, if you've got multiple children with different needs, and one, you might well have one who really doesn't want to go to groups and things, and one who loves that. And it's a real balancing act. They do get older, don't they, though, you know, and it does get easier.
Yeah.
But I always think, well, can you somehow, at least can the adult, the parent, somehow find a way to satisfy their need for community without necessarily taking their child? Because sometimes it's what we need as well.
Yeah. We used to have one home ed parent in the locality used to run a, you know, home ed parents one evening a month at their house.
All right.
So they did, like, babes in arms could attend. That was really good, actually. That was, you know, just going out. And I always had a baby with me but that was one thing that I think really helped.
Yeah. I think also for the child who is a bit anxious about going out, to see the parent forging links and making community, I think it's can be quite reassuring for them. And it can sort of lessen that impact of the big wide world out there. If the parent is showing that actually, yeah, you can find people, you know, we can meet our own needs. Again, that sort of modelling meeting our needs as well, I think is really important. You know, obviously balancing that with being with our children, but making sure that we are aware of what we need and somehow finding that, it feels very important. Heidi, we're coming to the end now. It's like before we finish, is there any kind of advice that you would give someone thinking about leaving a conventional school, taking this route?
I have lots of advice.
Loads of it. That's another hour.
I know. For people thinking about leaving, I would say most people say the thing that they regret the most is not leaving sooner. If it's something that you are equipped to do and you can do it, it always feels like sort of standing on a precipice before jumping. You know, it really can feel very daunting. But most people say they wish they had done it sooner. And there is such a big difference as well between... So a lot of the families I work with have previously had children who have struggled to go to school. So they're sort of in a situation where their children aren't really going to school, but you're not actually officially home educating. And there's such a big difference once you've made that decision, because once you say we are home educating and school, you know, you're not going to go to school. School isn't an option, although it is always an option. But, you know, once you've made that step and said, we are home educating now, it releases so much pressure from you in terms of your relationship with school and for your children as well. It has a really big impact, just that definitive moment of stepping into home educating and schooling. And the other thing that's really been on my mind a lot recently is sort of the concept of time and how slow how slow my life is, but like we're not rushing around every day. I'm not rushing to get my children out the door in the morning. We're not rushing to do homework. We're not constantly trying to reach the next milestone or the next target. We're really relaxed, I guess. Maybe would be a better way of saying than slow. We're really slow. We're really relaxed. And this idea that my children can do things in their own time and come to things in their own time. And even the process of talking and negotiating and having, you know, that takes time. So not to feel rushed and not to worry if your children just don't seem to be galloping on, either physically or academically. I think it's one of the first videos I did actually was about slowing down and just taking our time, but because it brings us back to like being in the moment, just being with our children, just enjoying them. And there's so much value in that. So kind of to take a breath and just to relax and just let things unfold.
Oh, we're going to end on those very wise words. So take a breath, relax, let things unfold. Love that. Yeah, thank you. Very wise. Yes, it's all in the present moment. So reaching for the present moment, not letting your mind catastrophize into the future, go to the past, but just be there and see the richness of actually what you have. Yeah. Oh, thank you so much, Heidi.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Yeah, it's been great catching up. And talk to you soon. Much love to you and your family.
Oh, it's so nice to be here and to chat with you.
Bye.
Yeah.